Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here, host of The Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. And we're going to talk today to Guy Goslock. He's the CEO of My Digital Money. And as you've heard me over the past few months, I've been saying, hey, crypto has a really bright future. It's weathered the storm like it has so many times before, and it keeps bouncing back. It's resilient. And now the conditions are right, and we're going to see signs, and we already are seeing signs of a breakout. So I asked Guy to come on because one of the things that we want to do on this show is to make sure that you have options. If you just leave your money in the bank, you're going to get destroyed. So we've asked Guy to come on and share his expertise on what's going on with crypto and how you can best navigate that. I work with a friend of mine named Ian, and I'll tell you, he's crypto, and I've learned more from him than I have anywhere, and crypto is where we need to be. It really is. And you say, well, Dave, what about precious metals? That's good too. What's bad is to keep all your money in currency. So, Guy, welcome to the show. I'm glad you're here because there is a lot of consternation over crypto right now, even over gold. When I talk about gold, I get some negative comments, and I just think people are really fearful because the future is so uncertain.
Yeah, and thanks for having me, by the way.
Yeah, our pleasure.
Yeah, so absolutely. I think that right now there's a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt, as we call it, in the crypto industry around crypto and other assets, too. It's just because the macroeconomic environment. And so people tend to, inject you with all kinds of negative sentiment. And, you know, everyone has their own agenda, so you got to take what you hear with a grain of salt. That's one of the things that My Digital Money, we try to do is just give you both sides, give you objective information, and just have you do your own research, right?
Well, that's what we want to do here, that's for sure. With regard to the Federal Reserve, I want to kind of tie into something. I get two comments from people, economists, and I want you to clear up and set the record straight here. On one hand, some of the experts are saying crypto is unlikely to replace traditional money. I know the Federal Reserve is on record saying that. But then there's some people say, well, they're talking out of both sides of their mouth because they have their own crypto coin. Can you clear that up a little bit?
Yeah, so I think you're talking about a comment from Michael Barr, who's the vice chair for supervision at the Federal Reserve. He said about a week ago that crypto tokens are unlikely to replace traditional currencies, and that banks should proceed cautiously when they experiment with that asset class. And so, you know, on one hand, I partially agree with him because, he's right. He said, crypto is volatile and he said two things. One is that crypto assets have proved to be volatile, so they're unlikely to grow into money substitutes and become a viable means to pay for transactions. So I agree with that in the short term, right? Because there is volatility, so you may not want to spend your Bitcoin. I know I don't right now. So I partially agree with him. I think that we've always advocated at My Digital Money that there's room for both, that you use cryptocurrency as an investment vehicle to protect yourself, against a devalued dollar and to keep up with the inflation rate and all of that. Fiat has its own purpose, but you should have both. I think diversification is the way to go, and understanding the role of crypto in your portfolio is key. And as far as the CBDC, the central bank digital currency, that's not actually a crypto, right? Cryptocurrency is something that operates on the blockchain. And the blockchain, kind of takes away the third parties, and you can have a currency that operates, autonomously, separate from the government, separate from, a central entity. And the CBDC is basically just a digital version of the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
I think, that it improves on certain things and it takes away other things, right? So it improves on maybe settlement times, transaction settlement times, and, tries to solve some of the problems that crypto solves, right? Because they're trying to compete with crypto so that, the dollar doesn't get replaced. Because let's face it, there is an advantage to the dollar being the world reserve currency. I mean, you know, we have the U.S. Is kind of the world reserve currency. So that's, of course, advantageous to us Americans. But, you know, obviously the U.S. doesn't want to replace that with a crypto. So they have to come up with something that kind of solves some of the problems, right?
Yeah, on the other hand, you can track
people too. So
Yeah, that's one negative that people don't like. But I wanted to ask you about the world reserve currency, because as I look at Ukraine, but I think this comes back to affecting crypto and the dollar. When I look at Ukraine, it looks like two competing monetary ideologies. You've got the gold-backed Russians, and many people are joining them. I mean, Saudi Arabia looks like they are. A lot of Latin America is doing that. And so they're saying, well, we like gold-backed. We don't really want to go in the direction that's coming with digital. So I'm seeing that. How does that affect Bitcoin, this move away from digital?
I think Bitcoin is independent, and I think it's not something that can be stopped. I think, you know, right now it's kind of following the stock market, because there isn't, you know, we're still not at mainstream adoption, right? So I think as we go further on the adoption curve, Bitcoin will become less volatile. But yeah, I think the advantage here is that you can, you know, you're not relying on banks. You know, if you know, you're in Ukraine and your bank account gets frozen, you know, you can use Bitcoin to get money from a relative and, you know, make purchases. And more, you know, merchants are accepting Bitcoin and other cryptos. And, you know, we continue to see institutions adopting it more and more. You know, for me, Bitcoin right now is an investment vehicle, because if you look at the average annual return from 2010 to 2021, it's 1,576% on average return, right? So that is, you know, way higher than any asset class. So for me, it's kind of a way to save for retirement and to build wealth while my dollar is, you know, quickly losing its value.
Let me tell you a question I get typically from my audience. When they say, okay, so I get crypto and I hold it for the long term, and I know even though it'll go down, it's going to come back, and it usually comes back much higher than when it went down. So I know inherently it's a good deal. I get this a lot. But what they want to know is, how do they cash in when it comes time for retirement?
Yeah, so I think one of the beautiful things is that you can invest with an IRA as well. And that's what we do at My Digital Money. We have a crypto IRA, and so if you want to use your retirement funds to invest in crypto, you can do that and get a tax break, right? And so you can do a traditional or you can do a Roth IRA. Traditional IRA allows you to save on taxes now, right? And you take pre-tax money, and then later you pay taxes when you retire and you take distribution. And a Roth IRA, you pay your taxes now, you take post-tax money and you invest it in crypto, and then all your gains are never taxed. So if you believe this industry, you believe that return that I mentioned, right, the 1,500% return is going to continue, then imagine having that kind of return and not having to pay taxes on it.
That's true. But how do people typically liquefy their holdings when they want to? They go, okay, I've reached 65 or 70, and now I want to put it in, I want to transfer it over into cash, and I want to pay off all my bills with this. Is this a common issue that people deal with, that hold crypto long term?
Yeah. I mean, the IRA that we have is just like any other IRA.
Okay.
That you would, bigger players like Fidelity, and so it's a self-directed IRA. So there's a process to take the distribution, right? So you can specify how much distribution you want to take. You know, when you turn 65, you know, let's say you want to take $100,000. You know, if it's a traditional IRA, then you will get taxed at whatever that tax bracket is for that $100,000.
Right.
But if it's Roth IRA, you just take it out and you don't have to pay any taxes. But it's just the same process as withdrawing your IRA now, right? It's a, we work with a custodian, Equity Trust, that's been around since 1974, and they've been doing IRAs, alternative assets and IRAs for, you know, many, many years. And so that process is pretty much, you know, what you're used to.
You know, it just seems like there's no excuse not to run to the Roth IRA just because of the tax advantages.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, what's happening now is so scary, right, with the inflation. You know, and so many people came out of retirement recently because of this. You know, I think it was Indeed that shared some data that people in the age group 56 to 65, have, a lot of them have come back into the workforce. They retired and then they came back in. So it's really hard for people to retire right now.
Yeah, so I guess what I'm going to ask you, it's going to sound like a stupid question, but I'm asking for myself, and I'm sure my audience is thinking this too. It looks to me from the rate of return you quoted and the Roth IRA advantages with taxes, it looks like crypto is one of the few ways that people can outrun inflation.
Yeah, absolutely, right? You look at the 10-year period. I mean, I'm a firm believer that, you know, in the next 10 years, we'll see, you know, very high returns. And so you, even if you take a small portion of your retirement or of, you know, any cash that you have that's disposable and you don't need right now, you know, if, even if it's a small, you know, part of it, having those kind of returns will make up for not having them, you know, in your safer investments.
Yeah, that so. makes a lot of sense, Guy. That makes a tremendous amount of sense. A lot of people, though, are fearful of crypto because of why? How would you complete that sentence?
Because of what? Sorry?
No, I guess here's what I'm saying.
Oh, why?
Yeah, there's a certain percentage. Yeah. It's not an overwhelming majority, certainly, but there's a percentage of people who are fearful of crypto. Is it because it's fear of the unknown? They just don't understand it?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. It's education. It's, you know, a relatively complex concept to grasp. Right. And so I think that's the main obstacle. And then there's also a lot of fear, uncertainty and doubt that's being put out there because there's a lot of groups that are it's not in their interest. Right. Because crypto is outside of our current financial system and it can replace a lot of the intermediaries, a lot of functions that banks serve. So there's a lot of powerful players out there that, you know, obviously are resisting. Right. Just like any other great invention. There's always going to be some resistance in the beginning. But yeah, I think it's just the fear of the unknown. And it's still early, right? It's still, like, if you look at the whole crypto industry, it's $1 trillion, right? And you look at equities, it's what, like 100 trillion. So, I mean, it's still very small. And that's why there's so much volatility. And so people obviously are afraid of that volatility, which, you know, not everyone is, you know, has an appetite for risk, right? So
yeah.
I totally understand.
So knowing we're dealing with some people that just don't understand, they're ignorant of the process and what it is, what do you do as an organization to try to make people, hey, this is how it works, it's not that complicated, and to make them feel more at ease into seriously looking at crypto? Do you have any programs or education available that can teach people what this is all about?
Yeah, so we have on our YouTube channel, we have a lot of content. We have a lot of articles. We're also working on some more content. We have a money series that's more about kind of history of money. And the thing that we started recently is National Crypto Month. It's in October. This is the month. We partnered with National Day Calendar. There's already a crypto national day, but we wanted there to be a month. And that month is focused on education. So we've been having a lot of different sessions on Twitter Spaces. And we're also going to post some of those sessions, and it's discussing various topics in crypto. And the whole goal is really to nurture future technologies and provide a platform for companies to announce new technologies. So that's all about, you know, learning, basically. And we hope that next October we'll actually have a physical event and more virtual events as well, just focused on teaching, right? And also we're partnering with some schools to teach you know, crypto earlier on. So we're going to be going around, you know, doing guest speaking, various schools. So we're looking to do that all throughout next
You
year.
know, it's really interesting. I've asked some economics teachers in high school. They teach sometimes classes are called free enterprise or capitalism or whatever they call it in that district. And I've asked them, do you teach your kids to do anything other than put your money in the bank? And a few say, well, we talk about IRAs and 401ks because that's how you can build wealth over a long time and have a pension. I say, okay. And I ask them, gold? No. Silver? No. Crypto? No.
Yeah, I mean,
I haven't found anybody that I've asked this question to in secondary education that teaches this.
right. Yeah, one of the things that I'm frustrated about is that we don't have enough financial planning and management education in our schools. I'm not talking about universities. I'm talking about earlier on, right? Tools to, really help us manage and understand money as well. And then part of that curriculum should be, talking about crypto, right? And the future of blockchain and its potentials. Because it's really the younger generation that's going to inherit all this, right? I mean, you talk about decentralized finance and all, it's all so early, and our young generation is going to inherit it. So, we really should expose them as early as possible.
Would you, if you were the government right now, knowing what you know, would you take defensive actions to protect your currency versus crypto? And so, what would you do?
Yeah, so I would work on having more of a regulatory clarity, right, around crypto, and try to figure out how to work with it, how to work with crypto, and also harness the benefits of blockchain. Because what runs Bitcoin? It's something called the blockchain, which we can do a whole session on, right? It's sometimes very hard for people to understand it, but this idea of blockchain, can be harnessed for the benefit of our country. And so there's a lot of use cases that, I think the government should be exploring. Other nations have invested so much money into research and development, and the US is not doing much of that, and also not focused on funding education and, giving, let's say, tax breaks for innovation. So a lot of the innovation, happens outside of the US. And so if I were the government, I would kind of figure out how to be a leader in the space, right? Because it's coming no matter what, right? There's going to be blockchain applications and, all around the globe. So you might as well become a leader in it. And then put, some regulatory clarity around it so that, more people are willing to start companies that are blockchain based.
What's the penetration level in the American economy with blockchain-based investments? So do you think it's
So
1%, 1/10 of 1%? What do you think it is?
it's hard to say. The data that I've seen was more around Bitcoin, how many people have Bitcoin, and it was somewhere north of 200 million, which, is a pretty significant amount. Like, but it just means that, people own it, right? Own Bitcoin. So really, if you look at the adoption curve of Bitcoin, it's very similar to the internet. And when I was looking at a chart that showed basically the curves side by side, we're basically in like 1997 right now, or 1998, right? So we're still a very small fraction. The population has adopted it, and we just need that one big invention, right? Like, and for the internet, it was smartphones. Smartphones came out in 2008, and the adoption of the internet blew up, right? So we need that big use case to be developed, right? And so yeah, I think we're very, very early on right now, and that's why I think it's a great time to invest and look into different cryptocurrencies and what kind of blockchain applications they run, right? Because there's always a blockchain application that accompanies the cryptocurrency.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I think if I were starting a business and I would be hiring, I don't say 100 employees, for example, I don't think I would give them a traditional pension. I think I would do a crypto Roth IRA. I think I know the advantages, but I'd like to ask you, would you do the same thing? And if so, why?
I would provide my employees that as an option, because I think diversification is important, right? So we're also adding to our platform by the end of the year digital gold and silver. So that gives you in one place, you know, you can put in your, you know, your crypto and your precious metals. So I would provide an option for them to have multiple assets in their retirement.
I just did a piece on a podcast where we're looking at silver going to have a huge breakout because of the new Green Deal. So much of the instrumentation, like solar panels and so forth, they're tied to silver, and silver is being underproduced and it's underpriced right now. That could really take off for people, don't you think?
Yeah, it could. So yeah, I think there's a place for that asset. I think gold and silver is more about preserving wealth, right? And especially if you don't trust where the dollar's going. And I look at crypto as a way to build wealth, not just preserve.
Yeah, I do. But you know what? What I don't like about the dollar, and I started down this road when I brought up Ukraine, if the world's moving towards gold, like the old BRICS nations concept, that kind of undermines our world reserve currency. So in other words, our dollar isn't as strong. And this is why I think we're smart to look at other things. I want to ask you about a term I've come across. Okay. And I don't mean to stump you, but it's called Decentraland.
Yeah.
Can you tell us how that relates to what we're talking about and what it is exactly?
Yeah. It's always very hard to explain this, but I'll give it my best shot. So, you know, in the people always use the word crypto, and crypto is not just a a bunch of currencies that you put money in and you just watch the graph and wait for it to go up and you sell it. There's an actual, you know, technology underneath that solves some kind of problem, right? So there's different kind of areas within this industry. You know, one of them being the metaverse, which I'll explain in a minute, and then another one being decentralized finance, right? That's all about having more peer-to-peer interactions, you know, exchange of value without as much of, you know, the middleman, and kind of completely revolutionizing our financial model, right? This fractional reserve system that we have. So DeFi is you know, basically decentralized finance. They, you know, you hear it referred to as DeFi. That's one area. Metaverse is another. You know, there's the NFTs. There's all kinds of, you know, little areas, little sectors, if you will. So Decentraland is really an application that is a virtual land, right? So it's a 3D virtual world on a browser where users can buy virtual plots of land and in the form of NFTs, right? So each plot of land is an NFT. And they can also have avatars, and, you know, they can basically interact with each other. So it's just like a social media platform, let's say, where you're interacting with people, but it's in a kind of visual 3D environment. So, you know, you have concerts that can be hosted there. You have, you know, various, you know, conferences that could be there, and you can actually go to like a shopping mall and look at, you know, interact with brands, right? I know that, in 2021 and 2022, we had a lot of different brands getting into the metaverse. And it's a Decentraland in particular. You know, I know Adidas really got into it, Samsung, Atari. I know Sotheby's held its first metaverse auction. And so, a lot of brands, Tommy Hilfiger, Dolce & Gabbana, wow. You know.
That's incredible.
A good way to kind of market your brand and interact. And that's what Facebook is all about, right? Is
the metaverse. Yeah, the metaverse, exactly. Okay,
right.
I have to display my ignorance now, and I apologize for that. But it sounds like on one hand, you're describing almost a virtual reality entertainment. But is this also a financial, is there a financial aspect to this as well?
Well, there's a financial aspect to it, because if you believe that this Decentraland, right, or the metaverse is going to take off, you know, if you can buy land now, it might be worth a lot more later. And, you know, I've seen people make good profits on some of these plots of land. I think that, you know, the cheapest plot of land right now is worth about $2,000. So people are paying real money for it. And so, yeah, there's a money side where, you know, if you believe it's going to blow up, and it's very early on right now.
Is this real land, like geographic located on planet Earth that people are buying, or is this land within the metaverse?
So it's not for Decentraland in particular, but there's other metaverse applications like Upland, which is essentially a replica of our, you know, globe. And there's actually places that you can buy. So it's like a parallel world, if you will.
That's how I see it. Thank you. You just took the words out of my mouth. That's exactly how I'm seeing it. And I got to tell you, the audience is sitting there right now going, wow, this is awesome. I've never heard of this. How far is it going to go?
Yeah, and a lot of people haven't bought into it yet. It's very early on. You know, people have varying opinions. I think it definitely has a market, and it's going to go pretty far, but it's going to take a long time. I mean, right now, you look at an adoption curve, we're in very early adopter stage. And so that's why I think it could be a good opportunity to look into, right? The actual currency that you use in Decentraland is called Mana. And we actually have that on our platform, so you can buy it. You know, and so that's always a good option. If you're looking at a risk, you know, a kind of a higher return investment over time, right? I mean, as we always talk about, Ethereum and Bitcoin are probably the safest ones,
mm-hmm.
yep. Developed. But then there's, you know, some early technologies that have their accompanying cryptocurrencies like Mana, right? So, yeah, if you're looking to get a little bit more risky, that's something to look into. And it's an interesting concept. I mean, there's a lot of different use cases there. You know, imagine a shopping mall, and you go there and you're kind of looking around all the different shops. So it's a more kind of organic way to find things. Like when you're online, you're just kind of searching different terms, right? Here you can kind of just like walk around, look at these different stores and actually see what the clothes look like, right? And then potentially purchase it right there and have it shipped to your house. So it's just a different way to explore, you know, and shop.
Wow, that's incredible. It's hard to get your mind around it, though, because it's so unique. But other than buying the land concept, what other ways could people use this to make money?
Yeah, I think the land is a big one, but I think, you know, that you can create NFTs that can be used in the land, right? And it can go across different applications between Decentraland and Upland and other things. You know, this the whole concept of NFTs and brands use this to make money. Like I said, you can have a company like Dolce & Gabbana have a store in Decentraland and, you know, make money. But as an individual, I suppose you can sell different, you know, NFTs, right? You can mm-hmm. go in there and exchange NFTs at some point with people. So it's a good way to kind of find people to do business with.
will banking ever move to this venue? Traditional banking?
I haven't thought about that. That's interesting. But I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. It's very possible. That you can kind of find financial institutions that way. But I see it as more of a means of interacting, you know, like finding people and, you know, it's just like a whole new layer of the internet, right? Which is more 3D.
Very cool. This, and your company is getting into this, I would imagine, at the ground level right now, since this is new, but My Digital Money is actually doing this.
Well, we just have Mana on our platform,
okay.
So it's a coin that you buy.
Cool.
So yeah, if you look at the price history of Mana, you know, it started off as you know pennies, right? And then it, you know, started off at like 0.0085, and then by August of 2021, it went up to like 80 cents, and then at some point, it went up to $5. And now it's back down to, I think it's at 65, 63 cents mm-hmm, right now. Mm-hmm. So it has the potential to go back up to $5 where it was, you know, in November. and even higher if it really takes off and becomes mainstream, you know, in 10, 20 years, right?
So people, it's almost like the early crypto people who made tons of money. I'm almost seeing the same kind of opportunity here. Is that a bad analogy, or do you think that fits?
Say that again, sorry?
In other words, you know, in the early days of crypto, some people just took off and made unbelievable amounts of money. And this is this in a parallel position to the early days of crypto, and people could really get wealthy if they get into it now?
I think it could be, but it depends on which particular cases you're talking about. There's some people that made a lot of money off meme coins, and you know, they just got lucky, I think. What I advocate for, and I'm not a financial advisor, but what I do for myself is I actually look at the coin and what problem it's solving, and is there actual fundamentals behind it, right? To kind of manage the risk. It's already a risky asset class, right? So I try to minimize that risk as much as possible by investing that I think are promising very long term, right? So you know, it's kind of an educated decision that you're making. And I think a lot of people in the early days, you know, they were just jumping on the bandwagon when they saw like a meme coin jump up in value. And so to me, that's riskier. But yeah, some people got lucky. But the people that invested in Bitcoin obviously did really well. And I think, you know, Metaverse could be like that. But I mean, there's a lot of other applications and music and entertainment and also in, you know, decentralized finance, I think. That's where a lot of the big gains will be as well. And we also have a lot of coins on our platform that are tied to decentralized finance as well.
You know, my personal political perspective is that the current ruling party in the American government is trying to centralize as much as they can, as quickly as they can. And I think what they don't realize, and just from what you're saying right here, decentralization is the wave of the future, and they're swimming upstream.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what, you know, this is all about. You know, Metaverse is one use case, but, you know, smart contracts is what allows us to basically have a bunch of decentralized applications, right? And so intermediaries around the world basically change their function. It's not like there won't be any intermediaries at all, right? People still want, you know, some things to be based on trust,
yeah,
right?
Sure.
You might want someone to manage your assets, but maybe the difference is that as an intermediary, you won't own the data. You won't own, you know, the infrastructure. And so you have less power. So that's better for competition, right?
Yeah, it is. See, you know what you're saying here to me? I'm going to give you an honest response as a member of the public. You're not making any overblown claims. You're talking about, you know, there's always risks involved here. You've talked honestly about decentralization, and you've just described this very matter-of-factly without embellishing anything. I think that says a lot about your company, Guy. I think that's why a lot of people like My Digital Money, because what we're getting in this interview is just hardcore facts, straightforward information with no embellishment. And I would imagine that your customer service team reflects the same attitude.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, for us, it's, you know, give you all the information you need to make your own decision.
Yeah, exactly. I want to shift gears for a second. This is so fascinating. We could do a whole show on this. This really has captured my imagination, but I'm not doing my audience justice if we don't get into this terrible topic that's killing the housing industry, killing people across the board financially, and that's the incessant rate hikes by the Federal Reserve. And I know the built-in excuse, the Biden administration spend like a drunken sailor. Hell, they're spending like the whole drunken Navy. And the Fed are saying, well, we got to raise interest rates in response to inflation. But it's killing the economy. How is it influencing crypto?
Yeah, so right now, crypto is acting as a risk-on asset. So very similar to tech stocks. You know, it wasn't always the case. It was always very separate from the stock market. But in the last year, it's been more correlated because of how investors behave. They treat crypto as like another equity asset. And, you know, a lot of institutions have gotten into crypto, right? And a lot of the trading volumes come from institutions. So when the rates go up, obviously, there's lower money supply, right? And organizations have less money, or basically it's reducing the money supply for organizations because the cost of borrowing is going up. And so they need to liquidate their riskier assets. So that causes the price to go down, just like with the stock market. So that's unfortunately how it's happening. A lot of people, crypto enthusiasts, think that it will decouple in the next 1 to 2 years from, the financial system and our currency system. But right now it's kind of unfortunately moving with it. And so the rate hikes, is not going to help the price of crypto.
Okay, that's another straightforward answer here. But is it safe to say that crypto can operate to a large extent independently of the system, of the rate hikes, the inflation? I mean, I know it's not going to be totally immune, but can it?
I think it can if retail investors leverage it more. Once the adoption goes up, I think that you'll see more of a decoupling. So we just need that big use case that will bring the masses into crypto, right? If that next application that is blockchain based comes out, that could bring a lot more people into crypto, and that could make it, the assets much more independent. Mm-hmm. It's technically independent, but right now it's just moving with it because of the macroeconomic factors.
I'm hesitant to tell you this because I think it'll make me sound like a lunatic, but I'm going to tell you anyway. I had a dream where the American economy totally collapsed across the board. Nothing was moving, nothing being sold. So communities kind of turned in on themselves, and they began to barter and trade and so forth, and every community became like a no-go zone. And the rate of exchange, what they were doing in these communities, many people were trading in gold and silver, but also Bitcoin. That was actually a dream I had about 3 months ago. In a disaster scenario, and I don't really want to go down this road too far, but in a disaster scenario, if people are holding Bitcoin, that could become a rate of exchange in replacement of money.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's use cases are already out there. I mean, if your bank account is frozen, you can use crypto to transact. You can do it quickly, and you can do it across borders. And so there's a lot of use cases for it even now. And I know that there's payment firms like Strike that's developing Bitcoin into its payment system so that you can kind of save merchants a lot of money and have faster transactions and, kind of essentially replace Visa, the big credit companies.
Yeah.
And that's just to use the Bitcoin network as a medium of exchange. It's not even, necessarily using Bitcoin to buy things. It's much more efficient as a medium of exchange. And so that's very possible that, that your dream will come true someday.
Yeah, I hope it doesn't come true. I want to see the dollar stay. I'm not hoping for any destruction, but I also, too, think it's absolutely awesome that Bitcoin and crypto exist along with gold and silver, because I think it keeps the money changers a little more honest.
And exactly. The competition is good because it'll force us to manage the money supply better and to deal with the root of problems.
Yeah.
Instead of just from.
I could not agree with you more. Do you think that this Decentraland is a sign that crypto could one day be independent of the internet?
I think it's one, but there's a lot more than just the metaverse, right? There's applications we can't even imagine yet. I mean, you think about blockchain, even in healthcare, you can imagine you kind of own your own data, right? Mm-hmm. Because right now the model have is basically surveillance capitalism, where, that you have these big tech companies that own your data and you can't take that data with you. It has that lock-in effect, right? And I think the more applications we have on blockchain, the better it will be, because you can take your, you now own your data, so you have a lot more opportunity. And imagine in healthcare, right? If you want to switch from one doctor to another, and you can take your entire health history with you, that could be life saving. And you know, if you know, imagine there's some kind of algorithm that tries to detect a disease, and it has to run on your data. So, you know, being able to take that data from one application to another, you know, it really opens up a world of possibilities. And it changes, it levels the playing field, really. So it's not just the metaverse is one example of it. But, you know, what I'm really talking about is how blockchain is going to, you know, distribute power in a way.
Yeah, exactly. Right? This is why Vice Chair Michael Barr of the Federal Reserve doesn't think Bitcoin's going to take over, crypto's going to take over, and maybe it won't, but they got a vested interest in it not happening and people not being invested in this because they want the control.
Yeah, I just think it'll force service providers and products to just be better, because now the user has more power. So now you have to actually provide a service that's really good so that the user doesn't go to a competitor, right? And so I think it just overall will be good for everybody. There'll still be opportunities for people to, you know, have profitable companies, mm-hmm. and all of that. It's not like you're taking all that away, but you're just changing the dynamics so that people have more opportunity instead of like the big tech companies, you know, unfairly profiting.
I'm going to throw you a curveball here, and it's not something that we were going to talk about, but I think it's important because crypto is such a safety valve in so many ways. Let me give you an example. There's renewed talk between Secretary of State Blinken and Latin American officials like President AMLO of Mexico, and they want a super state America. And I know from experience, when I watch the EU, that you have to have a central equalization point of all the currencies. And if your currency's on top, your citizens are going to suffer the greatest loss. So let's say the peso was 11-1, just for argument. The midpoint would be 5.5. And hypothetically, in that example, Americans would lose 50% of their buying power on that kind of merger. But if you were vested in precious metals and crypto, you don't have to be in that system.
Right. Or you can, you know, have both. And so
yeah, there you go. Exactly. That's the best of both worlds. Yeah. Well, there's something coming up too. Actually, not coming up. It's already here. National Crypto Month, October.
Yeah, that's what I was earlier. Yeah, National Crypto Month is basically what we started to be a month of education. It was picked. October was picked because that's when Satoshi Nakamoto, who no one knows the real identity of, published a white paper of Bitcoin and basically released a vision of having this, you know, kind of autonomous, system that validates your transactions, so you eliminate the middleman. And he laid out the vision, and a few months later in January, and by the way, it was a response to the financial crisis, as you know. And so this was the solution, and it actually was implemented. This is something that actually was what came up. Nick Szabo, who's a famous computer scientist, came up with in the 90s, but the Satoshi actually implemented it. And so that's why we chose October, and the month is all about teaching and having people unveil new technologies and just raising awareness. And a big part of it, one of the areas we focus on is how blockchain could be used for nonprofits to track how donations are used and also to help raise funds. So we have a lot of sessions that, you know, we want to explore different use cases for nonprofits. And another one is another area we focus on is education. It's just talking about how to educate the younger generation on blockchain and crypto.
Right, right.
And in general, just educating the public and each other. So we have a bunch of sessions this month. The next one is going to be about the metaverse, actually, on Friday. So it's going to be a panel.
Cool.
And, you know, we're going to talk about the metaverse if you're interested. please tune in. But
How do
yeah,
people, can the public come and watch, or how does that work?
we are on Twitter Spaces. My Digital Money is on Twitter space on Twitter, so you can add us there, and then you'll get a notification of, when it's starting, and you can listen in. And we'll also post it on our YouTube, at some point, a few days later.
Oh, so
So we'll
you'll
have it on our.
publish the replay on YouTube. Very cool. If you'd have someone send me maybe a notification of that, I'll post that on my website. I think that is really cool. Do you know where you're going to get the young people though? And I know I keep coming back to this guy, and I'm sorry, but I think the younger people are going to be enthralled with Decentraland. This is right up their alley. I think if you're looking to bring the younger generation in and not just have them think they got to put all their money in the bank, I think Decentraland is where it's at.
Yeah, I mean, I think the younger generation is already engaging in this way, right? My nephew plays Fortnite,
Oh,
and that's just what it is. He has his own car, and he's meeting other kids there. I mean, during COVID, it was huge, obviously, because that was the way to interact. But I think kids are somewhat exposed to it already, so I think it's a no-brainer.
well, when people call your call center, and go ahead and give out that number because we always do that for people who have books or something to promote. So, when people call into your call center, what number would they call?
833-636-2008. And that's one of the benefits of My Digital Money is we actually have humans that pick up the phone. So you have the actual automated platform where you can buy and sell on your own, but you also can get that comfort of a human talking to you about crypto and how to sign up and how to trade if you need that help.
Can you get that
So
number
let me
out
give you
one
the
more
number.
time?
Yeah, it's 833-636-2008.
Okay, 2008. Okay,
And
let's.
you could also go on my.com, and you can find the number very easily there. The other thing I always like to highlight is that we have a play money account, so you get fake money when you sign up. It literally takes 2 minutes. You don't put any credit cards, and you can actually practice trading, right, and get comfortable.
Wow. See, again, there you go. You are helping people get educated in a new venue in a risk-free environment. I think that's absolutely awesome. So the number here to call, ladies and gentlemen, is 833-636-2008. No obligation call. They don't put pressure on you. No, I've talked to them, but they will answer all of your questions. So have your questions ready when you call. You can also go online to DaveCryptoIRA.com. That's DaveCryptoIRA.com. Guy, this has been absolutely fascinating. And we covered a lot of territory, but you're going to make me go do some research on Decentraland. You got my imagination running wild on that. And I may look for a way to get involved in this. I think it's fantastic. Well, you're doing great work because you're giving people an option. And I think that's so important today because the last thing that people in this country need is to get locked into a singular system because we're seeing how quickly that can go south.
Right. Yeah, we want to give people options. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that you're doing. Well, our guest, ladies and gentlemen, has been Guy Gottschalk. He's the CEO of My Digital Money. And I'm telling you, I'm going to get a lot of good response on this interview. But again, that number to call is 833-636-2008, or you can go to DaveCryptoIRA.com. And I think the Roth IRA is fantastic too. Guy, thanks so much for being generous with your time, and look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, Dave.
Take care.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Our thanks to Guy Gottschalk for joining us. And boy, was that fascinating with what's coming with crypto. And I think there's so much money to be made, but there's even more. There's more I want to bring to you because you need to be looking at alternative currencies, alternative ways of storing wealth. Because when you hear this next story about what's going on in Australia, you are going to be left dumbfounded. Well, I'm sure a lot of you have heard of Jim Rickards, and he has been an advisor to the Pentagon, to the Fed, to all the big boys in the economy. And his ads are floating around, and a lot of them are attached to what I'm doing with regard to currency, financial devaluation, the Bitcoin, the Mark of the Beast coin, whatever you want to call it. his ads are running on top of my YouTube presentations. And he is not pulling any punches. He's talking about Executive Order 14067. And he says basically it's the end of all financial freedom. It's the end of all freedom. It's the ultimate social credit system. And Jim Rickards says that he's now promoting this on his site, but he feels that soon his work is going to be censored and taken down. And he's referencing specifically what we've talked a lot about on YouTube, which is executive order signed by Biden in March. Executive Order 14067, which is the introduction of the digital dollar, and you will not be able to use your regular dollar, and this will force people into alternatives. Of course, they'll be outlawed. Now, hear me clearly. Gold, silver, cryptocurrency. These are going to be the alternatives. And even if the government moves to outlaw them, people are not going to obey once they figure out what this is all about. This is something that the mainstream media is refusing to cover. Now, what's that going to look like? We don't know all the details yet, but they're emerging from a bank in Australia that I wanted to talk to you about. There's a bank in Australia right now as we speak that is issuing bills to its customers saying, you spent this much money on food, this much money on eating out, this much money on transportation, and they're doing other items too. But they're getting itemized notifications of their egregious offense to the, well, shall we say, clean economy, and they're being billed for this offense. You can have it deducted, you could pay in payments, but this is absolutely phenomenal what's happening. Now, Breitbart has actually picked up on this, and they have published a good portion of this. And I think Breitbart caught the first generation because they do really good work. But I think that some of the things they left out was stuff that came out a little bit later. And what I discovered is there's actual transactional fees that are taken out of this. So if you eat, they deduct. This is how they're going to get you to eat bugs because you're not going to be able to afford their fees to eat meat. And you know there's a war right now on agriculture. In fact, let me step aside for a second and add this qualifier. I said back on September 15th, when the government came out and says, we've averted the railroad strike by one day. Aren't we wonderful? Vote for us. And I said, bull crap. The railroad workers, the rank and file, are telling me personally that this is a load of crap. They haven't approved anything. They're making an announcement based on ancillary agreements with everyone but the railroad workers. Well, they rejected this deal, and now the railroad's set poised to set a strike date. Let me say this very clearly. 62% of all agriculture and food is transported by rail. Okay, I don't think I need to say any more than that. Back to what this bank is doing. They're charging you more for eating out. They're charging you a little bit less to eat, but they still charge you to eat. But guess what they don't charge you for? Eating bugs, plants, and aquatics. And here's the other thing. How the heck are you going to afford to drive to work? They're billing you out of, it's just astronomical. What if you get into a car and drive and you fill up your tank on your credit card, this is what they're using to track you. And you're not going to be able to much longer go in and pay the attendant cash. They're moving away from this in Australia. And this is why they had part of the COVID, what they did, remember? No, we can't use cash. We got to put up these plastic dividers. Give us your credit card and we got our gloves on. Do you remember that? Well, this was in anticipation of this. COVID was no more than crate training, like you do with a dog, to discipline it, confine it, and give total control over that animal. Well, this is what they're doing to us. The beta test is going on right now in Australia. So if you wonder why I brought on Guy Gottschalk and we talked about crypto, the future of crypto, why it's good. If you wonder why we look at gold, why we look at silver, why we look at alternatives, because people, whether it's black market or still accepted by the government, and I don't think they're going to do that, they are going to subjugate you through money. They're going to bend you to the altar of the green climate cult. Europe is being sacrificed right now on the green climate cult. Millions could die from starvation and exposure this year. And what did the German government do? They put out a notice, "Don't bitch, put on two sweaters." And that's pretty close to a literal quote. And I'm hearing from people in Germany, they're ready to rise up. I hope they do. This is it for the Common Sense Show. I want to thank you so much for joining us. God bless all of you. We're truly living in biblical times. Get right with the Lord, and we will see you back here in the next broadcast.